Greetings and welcome to the A-Pod. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm TM.
And oh boy, did we watch a movie this week.
Two of them, actually.
Well, no, but we watched a movie. Oh boy. And then, of course, we also watched something that was very entertaining, which we'll get to in a second. But oh boy, did we watch a movie. It was a lot of movie. And I think a lot of movie might be the best way to describe it.
Maybe too much movie.
That's entirely possible. But that's something that we'll take up with the Paul W.S. Anderson wannabe we're dealing with this week.
Oh my God.
Later. I know, that was embarrassing. But before we get there, we have some random crap to address. First off, I just want to recommend a video game to people, as I so often do. This one is called Blasphemous, and it's a side-scrolling Metroidvania Dark Souls-ish game that, is entirely based around using Catholic Renaissance iconography.
Weird.
For building its crazy world full of horrible monsters. So there's, monstrous guys in Inquisition hats. Right, so there actually it goes all the way back to Inquisition. There's all this horrible Inquisition imagery, the pointy Inquisitor caps, the horrible torture implements everywhere. But then all kinds of monsters will be based on the images of people from various Renaissance paintings. You have cherubs that turn into horrible beasts. The game is set in a succession of elaborate churches.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's a great look. I'm really loving the gameplay. I'm totally happy with the experience. It's called Blasphemous. It's like $20, and I would encourage anybody who likes their Metroid-style games unbelievably violent to give it a look, because this is 100% something you'll enjoy.
All right.
All right, so check it out. Next up.
A documentary series, I guess.
Ooh.
So I told you about this, and you went and watched the whole thing.
Yep.
So we watched The Confession Killer.
Oh my God.
Wow, right?
It's a lot.
It's incredible.
Like, I knew a bunch of this story. Like, I knew that Henry Lee Lucas was, just a liar who enjoyed hot lunches and so confessed to a ton of murders. But I didn't know, the huge part of Texas Ranger corruption. I did not know that part of the story.
I didn't know that he was a liar. Like, this is all new to me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I just knew that, he'd killed a bunch of people, which turns out isn't true. He killed three people.
Yep, killed three people. Everything else was a lie.
Yeah.
As far as we can tell. Maybe he killed somebody else once or twice, but there's no solid evidence that he killed anybody but his mother and his girlfriend and the lady whose house he was staying at.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
But it's incredible. Like, just every episode ends on a cliffhanger or a bombshell. So you got to keep watching. And you go through this weird experience watching the series because you're like, well, okay, is he an idiot or is he a genius? Is he manipulative or is he being manipulated?
Yeah.
And everybody has a different opinion about what exactly is going on.
Yeah.
With him and why he's confessing.
Why?
And I just kind of can't really wrap my head around it. Like, who's playing who?
But the weird part is, it's like the one, and the crazy part about the story is the one thing we can say for sure is he didn't really kill anybody. Like, he killed a couple of people and that's it.
Yeah.
All of the stories, all of these horrible stories about traveling and killing people, that was all lies because, as they said, this whole idea that he was a drifter who crossed the country murdering people
isn't true.
It's not true at all. He just lived in he would live at a place for a couple of years at a time, and he worked, low skill, low wage jobs. And there is a massive paper trail of him for every place he lived. And it's like the minute someone actually went to the trouble of trying to track down his paper trail, it wasn't hard to do.
Yes. But even though it's really easy to unravel or pull on those threads and unravel his story, the police didn't care.
No, the cops had no motivation to actually do that.
So upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
to the point where they ruined other people's lives to try to keep those cases cleared and to try to...
Like, I want people to watch this, so I'm not going to go entirely into what happened to this guy who was like, I'll run for governor, and then later I'll run for president. All in my history of being a crusading DA. And it's like, hey, so what happens if a guy like that tries to do the right thing? You might be surprised.
He never ran for president.
No, he's saying that's the end goal when you're trying to become the governor of Texas, is you want to become president. There's not a governor of Texas who didn't become governor of Texas because they wanted to become president.
To George Bush's credit, he did commute.
He did! I was so
Henry
blown away
Lucas's,
by that. Henry
Lucas's, death sentence.
Because it's like, although, I mean, it's kind of hard not to when someone shows up with a piece of paper proving that he was 1,000 miles away.
Well, more than
when
one, but 600
yes.
pieces of paper.
Yes, you're right. That's like, there's just concrete evidence because he was in friggin', like, walking out of a jail cell 1,000 miles
no,
away.
No, he was when cashing a check.
You're right, cashing a check.
Like
the jail cell was the other one. You're right. The jail cell was the one with the couple that was killed on the side of the road, where it's like, oh, that, he was getting out of jail as they were being killed 1,600 miles away. You're right, he was cashing a check, and of course they keep records of when people cash checks, and he had to show ID to cash a check.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an amazing story. I would encourage everybody to check it out, because, you know, I mean, there's plenty of interesting documentaries about how screwed up criminal justice is in America, but this one is fascinating because it shows you how far these cops will go just to not have to investigate crimes.
It's not even not investigating crimes. That isn't the issue here. The issue is that they had a guy willing to confess to unsolved murders, and all they care about is just clearing cases.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
it's only later on with that woman from, I think, Lubbock, or maybe there's two different families that are experiencing the same problem. It's been proven without a doubt that Lucas did not kill their family member, and the police will not open or reopen
the
investigation.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
But for the Texas Rangers and for these other smaller police departments, they don't care. It's like, he's admitting to killing this person. That's it.
Fine,
it's off
by
the
us.
Book.
That's all
on
we
to
need.
The next. Yeah.
God. It's so
terrifying. That they're not willing to do the work. They just, you know, they got someone making it easy for them. Why would you give that up?
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think that's part of the horror of it is like, you know, and this is what we say all the time when we're talking about this cop stuff. Like, cops want to get home by 9 too, you know, like. Cops want to go home by 5 as well. They want to go home at the end of the day. They don't want to keep working on these cases. If someone says, I did it, they'll be like, well, that's good enough for me. And
but
the
also,
problem
but
becomes...
That, but it's just also, it's the sort of bigger issue of confession being the most important crime-solving tool, I guess, in the crime-solving toolbox. And that, like, it's been proven time and again that it's not as simple as that.
Yeah, not only not as simple as that, but it's like the confessions tend to be some of the least reliable things if certain techniques are used. And you just see those techniques used over and over and over again here. And also the fact that, I mean, Henry Lee Lucas really does seem to not be a stable guy anyway. Like, he doesn't seem to be all there in any clear definition. Like, he's not a completely sane person.
Well, he's a dull norm. Well, this is the other thing. There are sort of conflicting professional opinions about his, not his mental capacity, because everybody knows that he's just not that bright, but his, psychological makeup, I suppose. And so on the one hand, like, he's diagnosed with being schizophrenic, which he isn't, or schizoaffective even, which also isn't true. But then he also he's diagnosed as having, or I guess being, or having confabulation.
Yes.
He's prone to confabulation. So he'll remember, like, he'll remember event A and event C, and he'll just make up event B in the middle to tie the two together. Okay, fine. But then you have other people saying, well, he has a tremendous recall and a fabulous memory. So it's like, does he have a good memory or does he have a shit memory? Which,
and that's so frustrating to watch, because it's like, you get all of these details. It's like, well, he can remember exactly where he was on a given day, and he can tell you what he had for lunch that day, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that's great and all, but, like, are you checking on what he had for lunch that day? Like, are you 100% sure that's accurate, or is this just more of his web of lies that he's always telling all right. the time?
And people say he's a pathological liar. It's like, no, he's a compulsive liar.
Yes.
Those are two different things. So...
I know. It's fascinating, yeah. though. Like, it
for
is
a simpleton,
really...
he's a very complicated guy.
He is. It turns out, like, a guy who... Oh, and, I mean, there's one frustrating part that I'm not going to get into, because it's the best cliffhanger in the entire thing, and I'm not going to get into it, but it's like, there's something about the way it's structured that I'm not going to say was unfair, but I'm like, well, I feel like you could have given me some information a little more clearly earlier in the story, and you didn't give me that information. Because, you know, you didn't want to spoil this reveal later on. And don't get me wrong, it's the best reveal in the thing, but I think you were playing a little fast and loose with making that reveal as shocking as possible.
I don't know. I think I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you don't.
Because I
yeah.
think it was think well it was handled. It was well okay. done. Yeah.
That's cool. It bothered me a little. So yes, what was the other? Oh yeah, but yes, I can't recommend this one highly enough. It is so good, and it's gonna frustrate you about... You know, it's going to frustrate you about criminal justice, but it's totally worth it. Like, completely yep. worth it. All right. Next up.
You have a list.
Ooh, I love lists.
So this is, we're taking a sharp left turn from what we just talked about. This week's list is every Michael Bay film ranked.
Damn. Cannot wait to find out this ranking.
So there are 13 of them.
He's
not including
movies?
His most recent.
Of course.
And this list comes to us from The Guardian.
Ooh.
So we are counting down, starting with number 13, Transformers The Last Night.
Wait, they say that's the worst one?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't like Transformers The Last Night.
It is not good.
But it's not, I mean, it's not good, but it's not his worst movie. Have they not seen Bad Boys 2? Like... And The Last Night, for as garbage as it is, has that incredibly fun opening scene where Stanley Tucci is playing Merlin.
Yes.
And I love that
scene.
That was
the whole movie.
Oh, God, just Stanley Tucci as Merlin.
So good.
Yeah, I know. Like, having all of these adventures with Transformers in olden times. Like, that's just great.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 100% but... Stanley Tucci as Merlin. I love that movie, and I wish that were the whole movie.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't rescue the film. It's a pretty shit film. But
oh, God, yeah.
No, I don't think it's the worst.
Movie. No. And that actually raises an interesting question. What was the previous one? That was The Last Night.
Revenge of the Fallen?
The previous one was Revenge of the... No. God, no. Revenge of the Fallen was, like, the second one.
Dark Side of the Moon, but that's a Pink Floyd album. Dark of the Moon?
No, Dark of the Moon is the third one. Then there's the first one with Marky Mark. And that one, I feel like, might be the worst one.
Age of Extinction.
Thank you. Yes, that's it. Because, and I mean, if only for the amount of time that is spent talking about statutory rape.
Oh. Right, yes.
Like, the weirdly yeah. large amount of time that film spends.
Yeah.
Just discussing when it's when it's legally okay to have sex with teenagers.
Yeah.
Especially because the film did not, like, they spent a weirdly large amount of time justifying having sex with 18-year-old girls when the age of consent.
18 is fine. She's 16 and he's 17.
She's 16 and he's 17.
That's the issue.
Or she's 16. Oh no, she's graduating from high school because she's 17 and he's
19. She's 17 19. And he's 18.
Yeah.
19. Whatever.
The point I find so troubling is it's all of it seems to not understand that the age of consent in Texas is like 16. So I really feel like Michael Bay put all of that in the movie to justify a creepy relationship that was happening in California.
I really don't.
No, we're not getting into Michael Bay's sex life. Don't get me wrong. We're not going to make a big deal. I'm just saying the fact that they put all of that into the movie without bothering to actually check the age of consent in Texas is a little weird to me.
Yeah, but we're talking about a series of films that thinks that you can carbon date a metal from outer space and that the Laurentian Abyssal is the deepest part of the ocean. So
I know. No, I just love that. Well, as you said when we watched the first one, well, you can carbon date the moss that grew on it when it landed. But that's it. Oh, God. Such a terrible movie series.
All right, number 12, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh, the one I've never seen.
So this is the second one. I don't know if I've seen. I think I've seen them all. Yes, because it had those two super racist characters.
And that is why I never saw it. You told me about Racism Bot 1 and Racism Bot 2.
Yes.
And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I take a pass on this one. And I've never seen the movie.
I was so uncomfortable watching that film.
Well, and then someone told me this, that there's an extended thing set with him at college and him cheating on his girl. Like, is he going to cheat on his girlfriend with this girl? And it turns out the girl is a...
she's a Transformer.
Transformer. And well, you're like, wait a minute. They can make perfect human Transformers.
I know. So why are they fucking around with all,
with all of these cars and whatnot?
Like, at least boxy looking robots when you can just, you know, make yourself a Terminator. So...
Oh, wait. I did remember there was one other good thing in terrible movie, Transformers The Last Night. So Optimus Prime has turned bad and they're like, the US government needs you to save us, Megatron. And he's like, well, I'm going to need some help. And then you get like the scene of them negotiating with Megatron over what super evil Transformers they're willing to let out of prison to be on his suicide squad. And I'm like,
stupid.
That was very fun. It was unbelievably stupid. But it's a very fun scene. So that's two things I liked about that movie.
All right, number 11.
Yes.
The Island, which I've never seen.
I have seen. It's funny. It actually came up in a stream I was doing recently where I was talking about how you see there's this thing. It's a game, World War II boats. That's not important. But they would actually build on boats to keep you from accidentally shooting your own crew members. There would be like a bar for the absolute left and right you could traverse a defensive machine gun. So you couldn't accidentally turn it onto your own crew.
Fair enough.
And that's really smart. And I'm like, that's something they've always built because they want these things to be idiot proof. And I'm like, and the thing I thought of right away was there's a scene in The Island where they're having a chase where there's like hover bikes and machine guns on them. And one of them gets hit and like the machine gun goes down and shoots the driver. And I'm like, but they specifically build them so you can't do that. No one would ever build a bike where you could accidentally shoot your driver. Like it's just, that would never happen because what happens if somebody gets shot and the gun gets pointed down? Well, you've killed a bunch more people. But yeah, it's not a good movie. I like that Sean Bean is in it, and that's it.
I just want to read the first line of this guy's blurb.
Please.
I paid money to watch The Island at a cinema 14 years ago, and I'm still furious about it.
Do you want to know the true story of why I saw The Island?
Sure.
There was a power failure in Toronto. So I was out walking around, just because, you know, it's daytime, there's a power failure. I'm not going to just sit in my house.
I think the word you're looking for is blackout.
Blackout, sorry, yes, a blackout. Power failure is a more local thing. But there's a blackout in Toronto. And so I'm just walking around, I wonder what I'm going to do. And I walk far enough that I get to where there's a movie theater, and it's like, the movie theater has power. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm watching a movie. And the only thing
that
playing...
That was the only one?
That looked even halfway decent. I'm like, well, I might as well see The Island. And I immediately regretted it.
Jesus.
I'm not still mad about it the way that guy is, but that is the only reason I've ever seen that movie. There was a blackout. And I just needed something to do since I couldn't work.
You would have been just better off. Just
sitting at home
walking.
Reading a book. Yeah, no, absolutely. Or just continued walking for another 2 hours. You're right. You're absolutely right. That would have been a better experience. All right, go.
10, Transformers, Age of Extinction. So here we go. Yeah, this is the Mark Wahlberg one.
Yeah, this is the first Marky Mark one.
Yeah. Really not much to say about that. Moving on to number 9, Pearl Harbor.
Oh, I've never seen Pearl Harbor, so I'm not going
to
weigh in on this
one. I don't want to. Here, I'll read to you what's written here.
Please.
If this was a list about any other director, then Pearl Harbor would be last. A film that heavily borrowed the lovelorn romance against the backdrop of a real-life disaster formula from Titanic, only to mash it beyond all recognition with a pair of dumb ham hands. Pearl Harbor was an absolute disaster from start to finish. It is, nevertheless, one of Bay's top 10 films.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bad.
No, I've heard nothing but bad things about it, but wow. That is cruel, guy.
All right, number 8, Transformers.
Oh, Transformers is just, wow, I guess Dark of the Moon is better than Transformers, yeah. It's weird to say.
Maybe I haven't seen Dark of the Moon.
That's the one with the Chthonian that, like, tears apart downtown Chicago, and Leonard Nimoy is in it.
I don't think I've seen it.
Wow, that's crazy.
Weird.
That is weird.
But I'm not going to go back and rewatch it just confirm whether or not I've seen it.
Why would you? No, absolutely. Why would you? No, but it's not, the original Transformers is just terrible. Although I read someone's wonderful, I watched someone's wonderful video essay about it, that I found very entertaining. I was just like going down, how on earth is Megan Fox's character not the main character of this movie? When it's like you go through all of her stuff of the dad in prison and trying to, you know, and try to make something of her life and prove she's up to it. And she's an expert in cars and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, why is this utter dope the main character and she's just there to pose? When in any narrative, this would be the main character. And I swear to God, this was made like 3 years ago. Someone watched that essay about why Megan Fox should have been the main character of the series.
And made Bumblebee.
And made Bumblebee as a response to it. I swear to God. Like, that's how point-to-point similar the arguments were. But anyway, so yeah, it's not a good movie. It made me hate Transformers, and I didn't think that was possible.
Wow, so, okay.
Yeah.
Number 7, Bad Boys 2.
This belongs way lower on the list. It is just trash in every way, shape, or form. This movie literally ends with them invading Cuba.
I've seen it, but I don't remember anything about it.
At one point, they're like, they can't stop talking about, you know, the large breasts of a corpse.
Ew, gross.
It's incredibly gross. They're hiding out in a morgue for a reason. I don't know why. I didn't pay attention to the plot. And they'll just, like, keep ogling the corpse of this dead woman. And it's really uncomfortable to watch.
Like, okay, moving right along.
Please.
Let's move past corpse breasts. And on to number 6, Transformers Dark of the Moon.
I mean, honestly, I guess it's the best Transformers movie. Like, I agree with them on this one. It's the one with, it's the one with Leonard Nimoy. It's got it's got a bunch of, it's the one where I think, oh, maybe Frank Welker had already come back as Megatron, but Frank Welker's back at Megatron. There's a giant, like, space worm Cybertronian thing that tears up the entire planet. They try to bring Cybertron to Earth. Like, it's a pretty fun movie.
It says the film was shot on 3D cameras. It had to be designed to Bay's specifications.
Really?
I did not know that.
I didn't see it in 3D, so his perfectionism didn't affect me at all.
Oh, shit. Maybe you should have seen it in 3D.
Yeah. Maybe it would be the thing that finally turned me around into not hating 3D.
Well, no, the only reason you should ever see a movie in 3D is if it was shot in 3D.
That's true. Which this apparently was.
Which it was. And I've seen, and like, I saw Dread in 3D and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah, Dread is pretty awesome. I'm not gonna deny that.
But they also have a genius for a cinematographer, so.
That helps a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next up.
Number 5, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
I've never seen this.
Secret Soldier, singular. Me neither. I got nothing to say about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I saw the, it's like, I watched the ads and I'm like, wow, this is a really inappropriate film to be making, was my sense upon watching the ads. And nothing I've heard about it since has disabused me of that notion. Okay.
All right. Number 4, Armageddon.
Oh, I actually like Armageddon as a movie.
Yeah, we talked about this recently.
Yeah, we talked about it. It's like, I like this movie. I think it's a pretty good movie. It's a lot of fun. Yes, it's silly and jingoistic in the ridiculous Michael Bay way, but I mean, it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Roger and J.J. Abrams called it the worst film of 1998.
Well, he's being very mean there. Wasn't Godzilla also in 1998?
I don't, I think that was 97.
Okay, well, if I'm wrong.
Or maybe Godzilla, maybe it was 98, but it came out after Armageddon. Maybe.
No, but that sounds like a year-end statement. I don't know that I would, like, I would have to look at the, I'm like, wasn't that the year Devil's Advocate came out? I feel like that might have been the year Devil's Advocate came out, too. I would have to check this stuff, but no, I can't imagine that that was the worst movie of 1998.
Okay.
It's better than Deep Impact.
Number three, Pain and Gain, which I've seen, and I don't think it deserves to be number three.
No. Well, no, but I think you were grading on a curve, right? Like, this is all Michael Bay movies.
But of Michael Bay's movies, I don't think it's the third best.
Well, what would you put above it?
I don't know, but...
See, I'm putting you in a weird position where you have to.
The experience of watching Pain and Gain.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, I doubt that there are, you know, three movies that you enjoyed more than Pain and Gain, because he remains Michael Bay.
Although I think you might have flip-flopped Armageddon.
Yeah, you're right. Armageddon is better than Pain and Gain.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating. Like, I find it to be a fascinating movie just because he's so in love with the Coen brothers. Uh-huh. And he's so desperate to make his own Coen brothers movie that he tried to make his own Coen brother
Coen brothers movie. But he's not a Coen brother. He just isn't capable of recreating that.
Oh, no, and you're right. He absolutely fails completely. But it's just as a stylistic, well, not stylistic, but like a story structure homage to them, it's fascinating. And I would put it like, I mean, it's not great. It has no real value as a film except as this curiosity of a guy who's able to do anything he wants and says, what I want to do is make a tribute to my favorite filmmakers. And that's what he did.
And then fail miserably.
Oh, no, he failed miserably. But I mean, he fails at everything he does. He's Michael Bay. number two, I guess Bad Boys is number one, which is crazy. Oh, two is The Rock and Bad Boys is number one.
Are you serious? Two is Bad Boys. What am I
saying? Bad Boys is one is number one. The Rock, of course. What am I saying? The Rock is obviously better.
Of course The Rock is number one.
Very dumb of me to say.
Because that was in his, I think he was still with Bruckheimer at that point, who could temper down his madness.
Yeah. I mean, The Rock is, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah. The Rock is a fun movie. Also, I didn't know this. It says here, a fake intelligence source ripped off parts of this film for a 2002 chemical weapons program dossier. Meaning The Rock is probably directly responsible for Britain's participation in the Iraq War.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm so sad now.
Wow.
Well, yeah, because, and I had heard, I guess this is has to do with the fact that, like, VX gas is nothing like it is in the movie. And that's what they were talking about. Like, because he talks, and... It is nothing like it is in the movie, and its dispersal is nothing like it is in the movie, like how it works. And I guess there was a file in there that was like, here's how VX gas works. And it's just nonsense from the movie. That's insane. Mm-hmm. Oh, Curveball. You were the worst. I'm assuming it was Curveball, the famous guy who just fed false stuff. But
I don't know.
Damn, that is... Well, that's upsetting. Thanks, Michael Bay.
Well, it's not his fault.
No, it's not his fault that the British government is incredibly unethical. But I still would like to blame him. Mm. No, you're right, I can't. Okay, that is shocking. And what does it have to say about Bad Boys?
Bad Boys is, it says Bad Boys is instrumental in helping Will Smith to world-conquering status after dabbling in middle-brow affairs such as 6 Degrees of Separation and Where the Dare Takes You. This is where Smith cranked up his charisma as far as it would go and watched the money roll in. It's stylish and lightweight, a perfect film, perfect first film for Bay, and is telling that it's this film that Smith is returning to now his career has taken a nosedive.
Oh, that's so mean.
Well, it's not
true.
Wrong.
100% true, but so mean.
The truth hurts.
My favorite thing about the one fun story I have about this movie, and the one thing I like most about him as a director, is he apparently, like, they were over budget, so they were not gonna pay for a plane to blow up on the runway. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you can't end the movie without a giant explosion. They're like, well, figure out another ending. He's like, instead, take the money for the exploding plane out of my paycheck.
Who said that? Will Smith?
Michael Bay.
Oh, Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. He's like, here, I will pay for the exploding plane. Cause he got paid, you know, $1 million and some to make the movie. Plus, mm-hmm. you know, percentages. And he's like, I will get more back if this is in the end of the movie. And I think he was right. Cause it's a pretty darn good plane explosion.
Okay. I haven't seen it. So.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's a completely
way to ruin the end of the movie for me.
No, wait a minute. Are you saying you wouldn't be able to guess based on the fact that there is a plane at the end of a movie by Michael Bay
that plane
was going to explode? I think you would have been able to figure that out on your own. But yes, that is the one, like, I will say this about Michael Bay. That story proves that he really truly believes in his style.
Uh-huh.
You know? He really does. He's in it for his artistic vision, which is
explosions.
A complete valueless mess. But it is his.
It's his valueless mess, and he owns it.
Oh, God. The thing about Michael Bay is he got a thing that he got a ton of crap for recently, though. Was getting into the horror movie trend. And I'm wondering, by opening up Platinum Dunes and kind of like producing a bunch of horror remakes. I wonder, do you think Michael Bay is going to make any more horror movies?
Well, I wouldn't know because this week's upcoming horror movie is called The Sonata.
Ooh.
Very classy.
That is so classy.
Right? After the death of her estranged but famous composer father, Richard Marlowe, young virtuoso violinist Rose inherits his old French mansion. There, she discovers her father's final work, a mysterious score marked with arcane symbols. With the help of her agent manager, she starts deciphering the mystical emblems and slowly unlocks a shocking secret concerning her father's past. Events that set in motion the satanic mechanism of a fiendish plan imagined on the day she was born.
What?
I feel like that last sentence isn't necessary.
No, you didn't really need to spoil that part of the movie.
Yeah. Anyway, I watched the trailer. Well, there are actually two trailers for it. I don't recommend the second trailer.
Gotcha. Gives away way too much.
What I'm assuming is the second trailer. Well, it's just not that interesting.
Oh, okay.
But I'm interested because I like movies about evil things, like evil books, evil music.
Oh, yeah. And an evil musical score, it's like we're back in the music of Eric Zahn. Like, that's such a great premise.
Yeah. So I'm
all in on this one. I'm very excited about The Sonata. Okay. We're definitely going to check that out. Thanks, upcoming horror movies. I guess it means I'm thanking you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right. We did watch some movies this week, and we're going to start off with a new Christmas classic.
Well, it's from 2 years ago, Anna and the Apocalypse. Anna's just a regular high school student living a regular high school life. Then a Zumpocalypse happens. There's no reason this movie has to take place at around Christmas time, but it does.
Yep.
It's got really nothing to do with anything.
No, I mean, it's, they wanted to have the Christmas pageant stuff, I guess, is the reason. But you could have a talent show
and still have that.
That's
stuff
true. Like, you could have an end of year talent show. Cause the only point that's being made is that people are away on vacation. Like, that's the only relevant thing to it being Christmas is that, like, a school break is coming.
Yeah.
And that's the only real reason it has to be at Christmas, which, as you say, it doesn't. It could have been any other time of year when there's a school break coming. But yeah, it's, oh my God, so much fun.
Yeah, this movie was loads of fun. I really enjoyed the music. I'm a little disappointed they didn't use the Steph character more because I think she has the best voice out of all of them.
Yeah, she's a fantastic singer.
Yeah. But yeah, this movie was great fun. It really drags a little.
Yes.
When they're in the bowling alley and doing anything for a while.
Just waiting for the movie to start up again. That is a problem. And apparently what happened there was some of that was broken up by a song for the principal and her father about the different ways they were handling the apocalypse. And it's like what people should value and blah, 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 blah. And that got cut after the first viewings because they're like, we can't be away from the kids that long. It's their movie. Mm-hmm. And so that song got cut and a bunch of other stuff got cut too to get it down to a svelte, like 98 minutes.
Okay.
So yeah, there was originally one other song that did get cut, sadly. But if apparently there's a reason it drags there, it's because those scenes were supposed to be broken up a little by checking in on the school.
Oh, well, they could have just cut some of the other scenes then in the bowling alley.
That would have worked too.
Because if you're going to, just from an editing standpoint.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you on that.
Anyway, I really enjoyed this movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, it is so much fun. And the thing is, it is just a perfect example of how you can take the most 100% standard zombie movie there is. Like, there's nothing special about it as a zombie movie. It follows all of the tropes in the correct order. And just by being a lively musical at the same time, you really enliven the proceedings. Like, you really bring something fresh and new by, like, yeah, we're going to do a different genre as well. It's going to be a musical.
Yes.
And I know they're not the first one to do it, but I prefer this to Dead and Breakfast.
See, I really enjoy Dead and Breakfast.
So do I. That's how much I like the music in this one.
Oh, okay. Now, the music is great. The songs are catchy. I was listening to the soundtrack the other day. Yeah, good fun. I was going to say something else. I've completely forgotten what I was going to say.
I apologize. I should not have distracted you by bringing up Dead and Breakfast. That one's on me. No, but it's like, I think that it's the best place to compare it to because, you know, it is the same kind of offbeat. But the difference is Dead and Breakfast, you know, takes the opportunity of being a comedy musical to at times poke fun at the zombie genre and be a really over the top, comedy. Whereas this one, more like, Shaun of the Dead, is a completely serious zombie movie. Whereas that was a completely serious zombie movie that was also funny, this was a completely serious zombie movie that's also a musical.
Yes. And is also funny at times.
Like, oh, it is funny.
The song, I think her name is Lucy, that she sings at the Christmas pageant, which is
Lisa, yeah.
So inappropriate.
Yes.
And it's like amazing.
The sexy Christmas song taken to the most ridiculous degree. The horribly inappropriate sexy Christmas song.
Great. I love
that scene so much.
It's just amazing.
Oh, God. Yeah. And the fish rap that preceded it. About the kinds of fish that penguins like to eat. Okay. How is this in a Christmas talent show?
Exactly, but yeah, I guess, you know, the scrambling.
And I did enjoy the principal reaction. Oh, finally something Christmassy when the song starts. And it's like, no, this is hugely inappropriate for a school talent show.
Grossly sexual.
Yep. There is no subtlety to it at all. There is a complete lack of any kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Yes. There is no innuendo or anything.
No.
It's just, you know, no, we're just saying it. She's going to have sex with Santa. That's super, what the song's about.
Super liminal.
Yes. It's a very funny song and it's a very funny scene. And, it actually, and I like that the giant climax of the movie takes place there. Like, I think, the one thing that bothered me about the movie, and nothing much bothered me about the movie, is, like, I kind of wish that there's a scene in the movie where they go someplace dangerous and a bunch of people get killed on their way to the school.
That was so stupid.
And it was so stupid.
That was infuriatingly stupid.
And it's like, it's not hard to provide a motive for that.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is make it so that there is a giant glut of zombie, like, they're running away from zombies behind them. There's a giant glut of zombies ahead of them, and they need to get to the other side of this row of buildings to get to the road that leads them to the school. So just put a giant glut of zombies ahead of them, so they're forced to go through here.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Instead, they have them decide to go through there, and most of their crew gets killed.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's that very been handled, upsetting.
It could have been handled better, for sure.
Way better.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, they do the right things in various, in the zombie situation. They do their best. They're overmatched. It's a terrifying situation, but you know, they're trying their best. I love that. Mm-hmm. I like these characters. I like what they're doing. And then for this one scene, you have them acting unbelievably stupid.
Yeah.
And that really bothered me.
Yes.
Because the rest of the movie is so tight, so well done.
Yeah.
Well acted, well shot. Like, I just, and again, I can't say enough good things about the music.
Yeah. No, loads of fun.
Yeah. Like, just to the point where I'm like,
kind of wish I'd seen it sooner.
Yeah, I know, right? Totally with you on this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I'm not saying you're going to want to watch it every Christmas, but if you find yourself wanting to watch it most Christmases, I'm going to agree with your assessment.
Right? Cue it up right after Die Hard. You're good to go.
Yeah. No, this is a lot of fun and it totally has the potential to become one of those Christmas perennials. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely. End of the Apocalypse. 100%. We can recommend that.
Yes.
Speaking of things we can't recommend.
Oi. All right. Our, if you hadn't already figured it out, our second movie tonight is Six Underground, which I watched just because, and then I told you
that I had to watch it.
You had to watch it.
Oh boy. I might be blaming you for this one for a while.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't even know where to start. I'll start with a synopsis.
Okay.
A billionaire fakes his own death so he can assemble a crew to take down an evil dictator.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they need to be dead.
That part didn't make sense to me at all.
You're a billionaire.
Yeah.
You don't need to fake your... Also, he faked his own death in the stupidest way possible.
Yes, by doing a plane crash.
Well, here's the thing, though, because he's flying a stunt plane.
Yep.
And he's quite good at it. So he would know, and anybody who knew him would know, that if you fly the plane straight up into the air high enough, you will stall the engine. That's yes. actually something they do in barnstorming. Like, it's part of the show. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. You stall it out, and then you tumble, and then the engine starts back up again. It's very exciting. Nice. And so there's no way that that would happen by accident.
Right.
Because at no point does he attempt to restart the engine.
Oh.
During that scene.
And so, yeah, like, unless he had been knocked out, there was no reason he would not know how to restart that plane and get it going again.
Exactly. So that's why it just didn't work for me.
Oh, okay.
And maybe it's just because I happen to know this one thing about stunt plane flying. Because it is the entirety of my knowledge about barnstorming, but.
Gotcha.
But so I had a real problem with that. But again, that doesn't explain why there's no good reason why these people need to fake their own deaths.
Well, that's the part I didn't understand because, so I think the idea is.
They'll just fall off the grid. No one will be looking for them. No one would ever suspect them. But why would they suspect them anyway? They're so different and they have such disparate backgrounds.
And the point I was going to make is like, and part of it is like, you've got to have no family to worry about and blah, 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 blah. But like, the thing is, I thought he was going to be looking for people with no family. But he's not. All the people have families and they're just not supposed to talk to them. But here's the thing. If you get captured and they run your fingerprints, like, they're still going to find out who you were. And if they want to get revenge on your family, they will. Like, he doesn't have the ability to erase these people from all government records.
No, he's not. So the whole... He's not MIB.
Yeah. And so my question is, why make them fake their deaths at all?
Yeah.
Especially since he's like, I'm not the kind of billionaire anyone's heard of. And he makes a strong point that it's like, there's more than 1,000 billionaires in the world and you've heard of maybe 3 of them.
Yeah.
Which is a really good point. Well, I mean, it's more than that really, but that's his point. And it's not an unfair point because you don't know who the vast majority of billionaires in the world are, which raises the question, why does he think he has to kill himself to become anonymous?
Right.
He's already anonymous. Already nobody knows who he is, so.
Yeah.
Why this whole rigmarole about becoming a dead body?
Right.
What is that accomplishing?
Nothing. Also, it's really hard to fake your own death.
Yeah, it is. I will admit that the guy who's in the special forces guy, who I honestly believe since he had a bunch of tragedies in Afghanistan.
People would believe that he killed himself.
And then he left a suicide note and jumped off a ferry. Yeah, people are going to buy that one.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because he publicly killed himself after leaving a suicide note on a ferry.
But we don't even know how any of the other people faked their own death.
I know.
There's no, and did you notice? So there is like a little how they joined the team moment, sort of, for every character, yeah, except the doctor.
Yeah, I assume that got cut.
I don't know. I also was really confused because she looks exactly like the woman that he has sex with.
Yep. I was really confused there.
The play?
Yeah. You're not the only one who thought that was the same.
Oh, I got so confused for a while.
Yeah. Like, wait, is that how he met and started this?
Is that why? No? But she's not a doctor. Yeah, so.
Yeah. That was a weird casting
choice. For a movie that's like really long and bloated, why would you cut out the doctor's origin?
I know, because it's like, how did this doctor, who is, I assume, like a reasonable person who has a career and friends and family, how did she end up in this position? Like, all of the people who are murderers and petty criminals, I get how they ended up here. Like, one of them is a spy. I get that, you know,
I don't
at some
think
point.
This spook can adequately fake her own death and just fall off the radar.
But it's like a guy who used to kill people for the Colombian cartels. Yeah, I get that he would want to have a new life. Like, all that makes sense. Yeah. But it's like, the one who you're interested in, what is this doctor? Why is she doing?
Why
is
she doing here? Like, okay, like, it's good planning ahead. You're going to need a doctor on your crew because you're going to do some crazy shit.
What's in it for her?
What's in it for her? And because she looks exactly like this other character, you definitely need to lay out who she is and where she comes from for people like us who were very confused for half the movie and thought she was someone else.
It was weird. It's a very weird problem in the movie. But then they remade Total Recall and at no point did anyone notice that the two women are identical. Kate Beckinsale and Jessica Biel are identical. They're the same person. So change one of their hair color.
Right? Jesus.
It's not that hard.
People. Or just give one of them a haircut if they're not willing to wear a wig or dye their hair. Like,
well, but I mean, if they hadn't, it wouldn't have led to the funniest scene in the film, which is that great moment at the end of the movie where they're in like a, they're in an ambulance and he's being comforted by his wife, who I want to say is Jessica Biel. I've forgotten which is which. And then suddenly she pulls off her Mission Impossible mask and it's actually Kate Beckinsale. And you're like, she didn't change anything. Nothing about her face has changed.
Same woman.
Like, imagine if, you know, Tom Cruise pulled off a Tom Cruise mask and it was still Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. That is what we're talking about here.
That'd be hilarious and amazing.
That actually would be incredibly funny. I don't know why I said that sarcastically. That would be great. But yes, I will say this film did cheer me quite a bit right at the beginning. Because I thought I was going to have to watch a whole movie with Dave Franco in it. And then Dave Franco got killed right away.
How much everybody hates him.
I know, it's so weird, right? What a strange coincidence that we had just been talking about how terrible Dave Franco is. And I start off this movie, and then there's just Dave Franco, and I'm like, oh... Great, 2 hours of this guy. And then he gets killed right away. And I'm like, oh, thank you, movie. And then they don't hire another getaway driver.
Yeah.
Like, that was the weirdest part. It's like, we need a replacement for this getaway driver. Let's hire a sniper.
Okay. So I guess they just didn't need maybe the getaway drivers. Okay, so let's talk about that opening scene.
Yes.
It's way too long.
I was like, I kept checking the time. Like, how long have they been in this car chase? Right.
It goes on for so long. And then we find out that, like, that's not the whole team. They're still, they have their parkour guy who's standing on top of,
the Duomo in Italy.
Il Duomo. Like, what is he doing there? We never find out. What
Why was he there?
Is.
What was his part of the plan?
Exactly. Like just to hang out on top of a church? Like
in case you needed him later, which I guess they did, because he parkours down a church and miraculously finds some Assassin's Creed nonsense to drop on the people who are chasing him.
But he doesn't have anything to bring to them. It's not because he's a thief, but he didn't steal shit.
No.
So was he there just to be like the eye in the sky?
Which you don't need because you can't see anything from up there because of how Rome is built. Rome is built with, you know.
Florence.
Sorry, Florence. Yes, Florence. Oh, so it wasn't the Duomo. My bad. Sorry, yes, because of how Florence is built, like, you can't see to street level from any high point because of these streets. Like, it's all five-story buildings that are incredibly close together. You can't see anything unless you're in a satellite way high above.
So I guess he's just there so they could have a parkour moment?
Yes.
I don't know. So that's so... Okay, that's terrible filmmaking.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Some absolutely fantastic collisions.
Oh, God, yeah. Although it did make me concerned about just how many innocent people they were getting killed.
There is, I don't care about that shit. I'm like, yes, blow those cars up, flip them over, have them crash into each other over and over again, because it's exciting to watch. Also, it really made me appreciate the stunt performers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because, holy man.
Stunt performers did an amazing job. Do you know who didn't? The people in charge of letting you see their stunt performances.
I know, I thought the car crashes were, for the most part, well shot and well put together. There are moments where you cut away to something. I'm like, what's the point of that?
Yeah, no, just let me see more of this car accident. He didn't let, there are these amazing crashes and he only lets you see 1/3 of a second of them. And then he cuts to 8 different angles within the next 2 seconds. I'm like, no, like that's an amazing stunt you
did.
Well,
they paid for all this coverage. They got to use it.
We paid for 18 cameras. We're going to show them 18 cameras. Is the logic behind the filmmaking in this scene. And it's so frustrating, but it goes, I mean, and you're right that they're impressive crashes, but it goes on so long.
It's so long. It's like half, okay, it's not half the movie, that's an exaggeration, but it feels like it.
And it's like, we got the point 5 minutes ago, and the thing is, we don't know any of these, who any of these characters are, and we don't know the stakes.
Yeah.
So why are we watching this endless car chase?
And that's explained to us later what that was all about. And Ryan Reynolds wants to kill this dictator who gassed a refugee camp that he was hanging out at for a publicity and photo opportunity.
Yeah.
So the dictator, I guess, is protected by 4 generals. And to get to the generals, they needed, like, this lawyer. They needed information on this lawyer's cell phone. So the whole Florence thing was just to get this guy's cell phone.
Yes.
And then the rest of the movie is them killing the last general who stands in the way of getting to the dictator and his brother, who they want to
put on the throne. Put on well, the throne. Throne, well, but yeah.
You know.
Essentially throne.
Yes. So it's like, what about the other 3 generals?
Well, they murdered them all in one day in
off screen.
No, it's on screen. That's who they kill in Las Vegas.
No, that's the last general.
No, they kill 3 people in that. They kill a bunch of people in that scene.
No, but I think those are just like the general's handlers.
No, those are the other generals.
I thought it was just the one general was in Las Vegas.
No. Then that's what makes it so funny, is that literally, that it's like, how are we going to get these guys?
He only tells the one guy to go to Vegas and just spend a lot of money, like gamble a lot of money and then buy some, like, gas or something like that. He wants to buy, sarin gas.
That's the thing that's so crazy about it is the other ones are like the other people they need to kill too. Or because it's only at the last, because when they get back, because when he gets back and they get to the top, like they kill 4 people in Las Vegas. And then when we next see the head of Turkestan, he's like, all of my 4 closest people were just killed.
Yeah, no, but I assumed that's because they got all these, the 3 other generals are killed off screen, and then we get this whole big thing about killing the 4th general in Las Vegas.
See, whereas I assume that those were the 4 guys they killed were the 4 generals. Although you're right, your theory makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Because why would you send all of your generals to Las Vegas to do the one job?
Right. Right.
But I don't think the film helpfully communicates what's going on.
The film doesn't communicate effectively who these generals are.
Yes.
In the first place. And he specifically just tells one guy to go to Vegas. And yes. He's going to have like an entourage, I suppose. And we know that he's a general for sure.
Definitely.
I mean, you can't be 100% sure about everybody else in that group that gets shot.
No, and it's especially weird because he's not acting. And that's the reason I thought they were all the generals is because if the other three guys had already been killed, you'd think he would be on much higher alert. See what I'm saying?
But he doesn't, but I mean,
if the other three guys had already been murdered.
It's so poorly put together that
yes, it's impossible
either theory is viable.
You could be right, yes. But my theory is that those four old Turkmenistani guys are all the generals because he's just sending them casually to Vegas to party and buy some nerve agents.
But again, it doesn't. Why would you send all of your top generals?
I agree with your logic. I'm just saying it's not a well-written movie.
Yeah, and so that's why I think it holds up that the other three were killed off-screen. This is General Number Four, and now we can get on with rescuing the prince from the tower.
No,
which is exactly what happens.
I know that was fun.
Not being facetious at all.
There's literally a prince being held captive in a tower.
In a tower, and they have to go and rescue him.
And they go and they rescue him. Oh.
Holy crap, this movie.
I know. Well, it's very obvious.
And they're, so when they have their, okay, I wouldn't trust these people to plan a dinner party. They are so bad at their job.
I know.
So, like,
very
part of
reckless.
The plan involves, like, infiltrating, I guess a radio telescope or something?
No, it's the broadcasting station.
The broadcasting station. Yeah, that's
for the
what
entire
it is.
Country. Yeah.
And they don't have their shit together before they walk in there. They just put on some flashy suits, but, like, you need to know the name of the guy you're talking to. You need to know the name of the guy who runs, like, I guess the competing state-run broadcasting facility.
Yeah, and it's like, you have to have all of this information down. And so she's, like, looking the stuff up on the fly as she
and
goes.
And doing a terrible job at it, I might add. So it's like, they didn't even have that shit. It's like, just have your tabs open.
Yep.
And on
tab
your computer.
Between them as you go.
Don't start typing things into Google as they're having their conversation. Like, how can you be that? I don't believe that you've succeeded to this point, given what I've seen you do.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, and it's because this film is not clear how much of a comedy it is and how silly it's supposed to be. Like, you've got your,
Well, we've established Michael Bay has no comedy chops.
No, none at all.
None whatsoever. And the script is
all
just
of the jokes,
such a mess.
It is.
That it can't be funny.
No. And I mean, and it is a vanity project for Ryan Reynolds, like specifically written for him, like based, I apparently on like an idea that he generated with the Deadpool guys.
So why is this so bad when Deadpool is so good?
Because it wasn't a vanity project and there were 18 people looking over their shoulders making sure they did a good job.
That Deadpool was a vanity project.
Yes, but at the same time, they were working with, like, intellectual property they didn't own and there were people they had to answer to. Whereas this time, it's literally Netflix was so desperate to buy big things. Ryan Reynolds and Michael Bay said, we want to do a thing. And so they said, here is a ton of money. Here is all of our money. Go and do that thing. We don't care what it is.
So I guess this proves that maybe Ryan Reynolds, he's the kind of actor that needs a good script and a good director.
Yeah, I really think that's true because Deadpool 1 and 2 worked fine. This thing is just oof. And as you say, it's because Michael Bay is terrible at comedy and always has been.
Yeah.
He's never been good at comedy, and he loves putting comedy in things. He's just terrible at it.
Yeah.
He just has no comedy instincts. He can't direct comedic scenes. Like, every time there's comedy in one of his movies, it just falls so flat and is honestly kind of embarrassing to watch. I always put down, like, one of the worst scene I've ever seen in one of his movies is that scene where he so fundamentally doesn't understand how to structure a joke that he, there's that scene where Marky Mark crashes into a guy's car with a spaceship and the guy's like, where's your insurance? And any person on earth understands that that's the punchline for the scene. End the scene there. And Michael Bay's like, no, let's have 45 seconds of Marky Mark yelling at this guy for asking him a stupid question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, Michael Bay, that's not the scene. Now Marky Mark just looks like an asshole.
Although I did enjoy it when he threatened to punch that kid in the face. That's always funny to me. Threatening children with violence.
Oh, no, that's true. Absolutely. Violence against children. Hilarious. Hopefully people in the future will understand I was being sarcastic.
The threat of violence against
the threat of, there we go. That's where the real comedy lies. The threat of violence right? against children.
The intent, not the execution.
There you go. Although, you know, The Simpsons has lasted a long time with threatening violence against children. Right? So there you go. You make a strong argument. I take back everything I said. Anyway.
So anyway.
It's so, and the, how do I put this? I don't understand why they built the whole movie and thought that a satisfying final act of this film is a showdown on a yacht.
Okay. What dictator or despot or any leader.
Yeah.
Has their panic room be a boat.
A yacht. I don't get it. You understand that if, like, the thing that you want to do is you want to escape the country as quickly as possible. If you're ever deposed, your only goal is get out of there as quickly as possible. Because if the people who are having the coup have taken over the army, they have planes and helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to do is get out of there as fast as possible. Do you know what isn't a fast way of getting out of a country? A boat.
I don't care how super your yacht is.
No. If a guy shows up with a plane, they're just going to fire a missile at your boat and then you're done. It doesn't matter how good your panic room is. They're just going to blow up your boat.
But the panic room, but the boat wasn't his like get out of Dodge plan. That was on paper when there's a crisis, regardless.
Go to the boat. Yeah.
Go to the boat. It doesn't matter if you're being deposed or you're out of toilet paper. Go to the boat. You're in crisis mode now. Go to the boat.
And I'm like, no, you're easy to find on a boat.
So this fucking boat, I don't understand why. So the plan is to interrupt the state-run news channel with a pirate signal. So that the dictator's democracy-loving brother can
say it's time for the revolution. Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, and we, like, once that happens, we only have an hour to get to the boat. It's like, why are you so far away from the boat?
I know.
You can be anywhere.
You're deciding when to start this. You're deciding when to start this revolution.
Because it's not like they need to be at the boat. At the
station,
to interrupt the signal, they can do it remotely. So it's like, why are you still an hour away from this fucking?
They're not even escorting the brother to go and take over the military.
No, he's like cooling his heels in a basement someplace.
And then after they start the broadcast, then he just walks up and, hey, military, I'm running things now. And I guess the military is just fine with that.
Whatever, who cares? It doesn't even matter. The whole point is then they gave themselves this like ridiculous short window to get to the boat for no reason. Like, you could have been on the boat already.
One of you was already on the boat.
One of them already was on the goddamn boat.
All of you could have been on the boat when this part started.
And then they send off these little subs to attach them, to glom onto the hull of the boat that are bombs.
Yes.
And then the bombs get set off prematurely or accidentally. It's like, but if you had always planned to sink the boat, why is this a problem now that the bombs have gone off?
Well, my question is, I don't understand why they have to do anything other than blow up the boat.
Right.
Like, here's the thing. Like, so he's having a party on the boat, but once the crisis starts, he's gonna, get everybody off the boat. Because he doesn't want to have a bunch of partiers on the boat while he's escaping. And he, in fact, does that. All of the partiers leave the boat, and then it's just him and the boat's crew and the security personnel, right?
Yes.
And once he's cleared off the boat of innocent bystanders, just blow up the boat. Like, why do you have to go through all of this trouble to try and arrest him? And I'm like, but you were just going to kill him anyway by dropping into the refugee camp. Like, just blow up the boat. Save yourself a lot of heartache.
Kill him now. Either way, like, he's dead. It doesn't matter the vehicle of his death. Just
yes. Like, I don't understand. Like, the raid on the boat is completely irrelevant to the plot. Like, if there was a situation, and I mean, we're not here to do script criticism or script doctoring for them, but let's say
that's our job.
That's actually literally what we're doing. I'm sorry. But no, like, let's say there were missiles that were going to launch VX gas at all of the things. And he keeps the code key for turning them off on him. So you had to physically get your hands on him to stop the launch that will get triggered when the coup starts.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly I understand why they're on that boat.
Yeah.
And that there is it is 100% vital to defeat the safe room and get onto that boat and save the day. But all they were ever planning to do was kill him.
Yes.
Well, the boat's right there. You've covered the boat in explosives. Blow up the boat!
Right?
And it's like, why aren't you doing these little things to make sure these scenes get motivated? For better or for worse, with the Hong Kong tower thing, at least there's a clear goal they have in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they want to accomplish, I know what the obstacles to accomplishing that are, and I know what the steps they're going to take to accomplish them are. So when it starts going wrong, because you've explained their plan to me, when it starts going wrong, I understand the significance of it. But it's like, I have no idea what they're doing for that whole end sequence.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no reason for them to be doing any of this. Oh, it's such a frustrating scene. And it's the climax of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And then their big thing is, and then we're going to use a bunch of magnets.
Right. What the, why?
Why?
Again. Or you could just shoot all the security personnel, because it's not like you're looking for a non-lethal solution to your problems.
No,
you clearly demonstrated you're okay with killing everybody.
You're here to kill everybody. That's your plan. So why are you going through these eight other steps to make that happen?
Oh, well, it looks really cool, so that's how we're going to do it.
Oh, my God. Well, don't you get it? We set up earlier that he was a billionaire because he invented micromagnets. Okay, but...
That's so? Great. Great.
Thanks. I mean, and you're right. It is... The problem here, fundamentally, is that this is just the messiest script you're ever going to see.
Yep.
Like, it is just a complete trash mess of a script. Where, I mean, the closest thing we get is... The new guy isn't comfortable with them all being depersonalized.
Yes, there's so, this, like, they're trying so hard to carry through this theme of family.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Ryan Reynolds is obsessed with Leave It to Beaver.
Yes.
Which, quite frankly, that reference is too dated these days.
Yep.
Pick another family. Pick All in the Family, even. Jesus.
No, All in the Family is way too dated. No.
It's less dated than friggin' Leave It to Beaver.
No, go with Full House.
Or anything. It doesn't, anyway, the point is, like,
no, I'm saying Reynolds based on Ryan Reynolds' age, go with Full House.
He's like anti-family, and the new guy has a real problem with this. Meanwhile, two of them are hooking up.
Yeah.
The French lady and the, I guess,
Columbia
the cartel.
Murderer.
I hated him so much.
He was not great.
He's a terrible character. He does not deserve to find love at the end of this movie. It was awful. Awful.
I know. He was the worst.
Yeah, like to the point, it's like hard to watch.
Yeah. I don't know what they thought they were doing with that character, but oof.
Yeah.
It didn't play. Whatever they thought they were doing, it doesn't play. Anyway, but yes, like you say, they try to do this through line, but it's so minuscule, and this film has no time for any character work at all.
Yeah.
So they just throw in these three tiny sops to try and get you to think that there's something worth caring about in this movie. But that's not what the movie is. You needed to spend more time letting us get to know these characters if you wanted to us to get at all involved in this. But really, they're a family by choice stuff. But I'm like, that's not what this movie's about, though.
No, not at all.
You could have made it that's what this movie about. That's what Deadpool 2 was about. You know? Like, I know you guys can do this, but you completely failed to do that here. To the point where it's like, you basically can't tell us anything about any of these characters, except for Ryan Reynolds has a secret son out there, and what he really wants to do is make sure the world is a better place for his secret son.
Fair enough. That's great. Yeah. Okay.
You know? All of his stuff about, you know, just doing it just because. No, that's all just a cover for, I'm sorry about this. Hold on. Be right back. Why, hello. Can't wait to see you. I'm going to walk over to the grocery store after you get home to get that jam you wanted, and you can come at the same time. Perfect, we'll go over to you. Yeah, come on. All right. See you soon. Bye-bye. I'll pick it right back up.
Okay.
So fundamentally, the movie isn't about anything other than the plot, and the plot isn't very good.
Yes. I when I first described it to you, I said it was hot garbage.
You did not exaggerate.
Nope.
But that brings us to the big question. Where do we put it on that list of Michael Bay movies we just addressed?
Oh, I think this is shit. This is a shit film. It is so bad. It goes way down the list.
Ooh. Because I'm going to do it the only way I can, right? Which is, which Michael Bay movies would I rather watch again?
I would rather watch Armageddon.
Well, no, Armageddon's like, I think it's one of his three good movies.
The Rock, so. Obviously. Okay, obviously. So the movies that down at the bottom of the list are like some Transformers movies, yeah. Pearl Harbor.
Pain and Gain for you.
Pain and Gain. I don't want to watch Pain and Gain ever again, but I don't. This equals Pain and Gain because I really didn't enjoy that movie.
Okay, for you, it might be a little... You might find this a little less painful to rewatch than Pain and Gain.
Probably.
Okay, so that would be where it sits on your ranking. For me, I would rather... So for me, it's obviously The Rock number one, then Armageddon, then Bad Boys. Then we get, I guess, Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Well, who cares? I don't care about your top movies.
No. I'm trying to say, what would I rather watch?
Yeah, pick from lower down the list.
No. What I'm saying is, it's like, I hate the Transformers movies is my problem. So yes, I would put it like probably fifth or sixth from the bottom in that I would choose to watch like three of those Transformer movies again before
watch the Transformers movies with the exception of the second one before I would watch this again.
It's weird. This is how skeptical and hateful, I am of the existence of Racism Bot 1 and 2. I would watch this again before I watch the Transformers movies I've never seen. But I would watch all of the other Transformers movies again before I watch this again. So I think that is a searing indictment of this film specifically, and Michael Bay's filmography generally.
There you go.
But seriously, there's a bunch of wonderful video essays about how he is the most American filmmaker there is, but they mean that in a bad way.
Ooh,
and I encourage you to just Google. Go to YouTube and type in Michael Bay, American filmmaker, and prepare to be delighted.
Oh, all right. For my part, I'm going to recommend the epic rap battle in which Michael Bay character makes an appearance.
Ooh.
I think it's Spielberg versus Hitchcock. I think that's how it starts. And then Michael all Bay. Of these other, like, these other filmmakers join in, and it ends with Michael Bay.
Okay, that's amazing.
It's so good.
All right. So I guess that's going to be that. Don't watch Six Underground.
Watch Anne and the Apocalypse.
Yeah, watch Anne and the Apocalypse. Don't watch Six Underground. We're going to be back here next week for, obviously, Rise of the Skywalker. I don't know how many of us are going to be back here next week, but there will be a show talking about that next week. But Merry Christmas. Because
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah. And happy holidays generally, because this is the last episode that's going up before Christmas. And that's why we thought it was so important to watch a Christmas movie. Actually, it was just you really liked this movie and told me to watch it. But I thought it would be nice to try and tie it in.
Well, I was trying to find something Christmassy, and I was like, have we seen elves? Yes, we have.
We have. It's not good.
Yeah, and then I found Anne and the Apocalypse on Netflix. I'm like, done. Perfect. That was easy.
So yes, we had a, how shall I put this? Fantastic time with one, terrible time with the other.
Yep.
Is there anything else you would like us to check out, Deanne?
Not at the moment. Check yourselves out.
Check yourselves out.
There you go.
It's that time of the year for thoughtful reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, check yourselves out. For me, obviously, we're celebrating the 1 year anniversary of Profiling Criminal Minds. So we did a special episode watching the movie Mindhunters.
Oh.
Which, is better than I remembered it being, but still not a very good movie.
I've seen that.
It's a ton of fun.
It's like, not it terrible. Really is. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not at all. Rennie Harlan is, I mean, he's a very solid director, and all of the actors do a perfectly good job. Mm-hmm. Like, I was hard on it when it first came out, but watching it again, I'm like, yeah, this is a fun ride. So you can drop by Profiling Criminal Minds to check that out. And then right after that, in the new year, we're coming back for season 7 of Criminal Minds. Season 7. Oh my God. Season 7, which is also, I think, trying to think, what season did we watch? I think that might be the season where we also covered, I'm blanking the name of the show, Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior. So that's going to be, put in bonus episodes, which should be a lot of fun.
Did you cover Cyber?
I have not covered CSI Cyber.
Oh, it's CSI Cyber.
That's CSI. No, right, they never did
Sorry.
A criminal. You might be thinking of Beyond Borders.
It doesn't matter.
Beyond Borders is the other Criminal Minds. And we are going to be covering Criminal Minds Beyond Borders when we get to that season. And it's going to be weird because I've never seen one episode of Criminal Minds Beyond Borders.
I think I saw the watching it for the first time. Pilot to that one.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you did. We just covered that on, our pre-tape shows.
So. Right. Okay.
It was not good.
No, not at
the
all.
The one thing weird about watching it was you watch it and Sterling K. Brown is there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, Sterling K. Brown is here. Is he going to be the killer or is he going to be related to it? Cause he's a fairly famous guy. And then I'm like, oh, he's literally just in one scene as an adjunct at the embassy. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. And I'm like, then I looked at when the episode came out. Oh no, this is the year before The People versus O.J. Simpson. He wasn't famous yet. This was just a job for him. It wasn't a cameo, which is sad because he's wonderful. All right. So is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the AVOD's blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us about your least favorite Michael Bay movie. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And if you're listening on an app, be sure to rate and review.
All right. So I don't know why I spaced there. I apologize. I encourage you to do all of those things.
There we go.
But until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.